We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And with the Lakers getting knocked out, we shift our coverage to kind of two major parts. In one is playoff coverage. We get to zoom out kind of into the broader NBA. And of course, still with the Lakers coverage, it's sort of a, where do the Lakers go from here? And Mike, I think a lot of where the Lakers should go from here should be largely informed by what we see in these playoffs. And so today we're going to give sort of our impressions on the playoffs so far, Mike. And I know you're as locked in as anyone on all of them. I've been watching as much as I can as well. And so give me some of your, what are some of your top line items in terms of these 2024 playoffs?
Yeah, guys, I think the playoffs are usually, at least in the NBA, more predictable than at least most other sports. And of course, this is because of the 7-game series and who has the better players. But so far, it has been mostly chalk. I do think that some people saw Phoenix beat Minnesota 3 times in the regular season, and it was really tough to get over that. It seemed like they had something that could work for that. I know Pete was not amongst those people thinking about the way that they play, and eventually they obviously crumble. And then in the Eastern Conference, you know, the team that is sort of the lone upstart is one that was predictive by the fact that Giannis Antetokounmpo was not supposed to return, or at least we didn't know, and it was kind of questionable, and it was enough for a lot of people to pick the Pacers in that instance. And so the Knicks kind of squeak by the 76ers in a ridiculous series. The only one still going in the East is the Cavs and the Magic, and you know, the Cavs have a chance to have 2 chances to close that out. And then we're still waiting on the final game of the Mavs and Clippers, but I do think a lot of people picked the Clippers. I, as you guys know, have been kind of down on what the Clippers might be from a postseason standpoint, and especially once the Kawhi news like really came through and he was healthy, quote unquote, healthy to start the series until they pulled him from the first game. And then he returned and they lost, blah, blah, blah. So it's going to be right. It's 1-2-3-4 in the West, and then it's 1-2-6, which are the Pacers, and it'll probably be 4 in the East. So what does that tell us? That doesn't really directly answer Pete's question, but what I always like about the playoffs is the style of play, kind of switching back to what are teams trying to do when they are all playing defense and your main stuff might not work as well. What is the counter? Which players can get through, can essentially draw in draw the defense, whether it's a double team or just the kind of attention that's going to get a player downhill. And that, I think, that bears fruit as well, just as to which teams are playing the type of basketball that wins in a series are the ones that have the best players. And that's a very generic way of summarizing things, Darius, but it's all sort of gone, I think, to plan so far. And these teams largely that were better, they're there for a reason. The Lakers could have been an exception had they maybe drawn anybody but Denver, but they didn't. They drew Denver, and Denver was able to come through that way. So I've enjoyed sort of the playoff overall picture so far, rewarding the teams that have the better players, and it's gonna continue to shrink and sort of tighten up in this context.
One of the things that stands out is, why are you better
when you have the better players. And something that stood out to me is like the shot creation of the teams that have advanced and the ability to generate good offense within the face of these better defenses, Mike, or at least like more focused and locked in defenses. I'm not sure we saw a ton of high-level defense in the Pacers-Bucks series, for example, but those teams were trying more defensively. And even on that side, what you see is the guys who can create shots and capably create shots over and over again in the face of heightened defensive pressure, Pete, or more locked in schemes or player specific game plans. Those are the teams, and also the ones who are like healthier or whatever. Those teams stand out. I'm looking at that Knicks and Philly series, and I'm looking at Jalen Brunson, and I'm looking at Tyrese Maxey, and like these guys who have the ball in their hands who can create offense.
Darius, stat for you, because Brunson was going to be the thing after I let Pete cook. And of course, now I'm jumping in again. So Brunson is averaging 29.2 field goal attempts per game, or he averaged that in the first year. That is the most since Russell Westbrook in the 16-17 season, when Russ took 30.4 shots per game. And I think generally that's not sustainable. It just happens to work for this Knicks team because they have this insane level of
just throw the ball up. Just somebody get a shot up, create a little bit of an advantage, jailbreak to the rim. Let's get the ball.
It's in the air. Yeah. Just somebody get it up. Yeah.
Well, I was saying the other day that it was ironic because I was watching one of the games that was in Philly. So I'm not sure if it was game 3 or game 4, but it was like a murderer's row of Philly royalty that was on the baseline. Underneath the basket, right? And so it's Dr. J, it's Don Staley, who is another Philly legend, and it's Allen Iverson. I was just like, man, it's sort of ironic that Jalen Brunson is playing the 76ers in this series and playing the way that he is, and he's basically channeling 2001 AI like Allen Iverson and like the 2001 Philly team, because it's a very similar construct to me, with like this one dynamic scoring guard and then all of these other sort of role-playing dudes who like compete defensively and will play a ton of minutes for like an old school discipline head coach. And it's just like, that's a formula that can still win if you have the requisite amount of offensive shot creation. And so to get back to my original point, Pete, it's like the stuff that has stood out is just like, we've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, or like we've got Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray. And from the Lakers' perspective, like one of the reasons why I thought they were in the series the way that they were was because they had LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Like these guys who were able to basically say, your defense, as great as it can be, or as locked in as it can be, we can still beat that. And that bloodbath of a Philly Knicks series, I think, was the epitome of that, as both those teams were sort of worn down, sort of injured, and the offensive brilliance of their top guys was still enough to make it like a 1-point difference over six games. It's sort of incredible.
Just a great series that I think it illustrated sort of the two major wings of the plane if you want to create a contending NBA team. And that's the shot making, shot creation, shot making, and size. Like, who are the biggest guys that can still shoot the ball, that can still knock down and make shots off of the creation of those guys? It's like, this guy's too good. We have to dedicate more resources, even when the closeouts turn up, that they can still create good enough shots for guys to get open. And that's one thing, Mike, in our eternal discussion about the value of shooting versus size and defense. One of the big mistakes I think the shooting faction makes is too many of the arguments are based off of regular season shooting. So I agree with the general premise that the ability to make these shots are paramount. And if you look in these playoffs, I saw a stat the other day where at the time it was like 27-8 if you just took more threes than the other team. Not even if you made more. You were like 27-9 if you made more. But just if you took more, teams were like 27-8. And so that's part of the argument of the shooting faction. The shooting faction is like, the shot volume really matters in terms of three-point shooting as well. So you got to get them up to a certain degree. But a lot of the arguments for that, again, are like, and you have to be top 10 in this, but it's during the regular season. But I would argue there's almost nothing about basketball that changes more than the ability to shoot a jump shot. And this is where I really kind of go along with your perspective on this, Mike. And yeah. So that to me, like, shot making really matters. And last night's game and what you guys are talking about with Brunson and Maxey and all those dudes, Maxey the other night pulled up from the freaking logo in the clutch. And like, that's a shot he takes. These guys are so good that, of course, it matters. Of course, that swings things. But I think you also have to be able to do that at on certain type of shots. And that is a distinction I want to talk about, D.
Mike, the point that Pete's making, I think, is a critical one around that stat, around being able to get the shots up. The game that the Knicks lost to force in overtime, it came when Batum got to a closeout that he probably didn't, like, that Brunson did not see him being able to get to. And that turned a potential three-point attempt into a wayward pass that turned into a turnover that was a critical play to end that game. And so one of the things about being able to get the shots up in the first place is that these closeouts are better. They are more on time. They are running you off of the shots that it's just like this, these regular season shots aren't there anymore. And so it's not just the ability to knock down shots. It's like, do you have even the wherewithal to get into these shots and the skill level to get some of these shots off? Because these are some of the shots that teams are trying to take away from you as well. So I wanted to add that variable to this too.
I've kind of over-indexed on the whole shooting thing, almost as just to underscore the point that I've been trying to make all of these years. Of course, you need some level of shooting. What my position all along has been, you have an NBA roster with 15 players. There are going to be enough guys on that roster that can shoot the basketball. Okay. Generally speaking, I started with the Timberwolves and the teams were really terrible. But I got to listen to Kevin Garnett a lot, just talking about basketball. And learned a lot. And then I get to LA and I'm hearing Kobe Bryant and Phil Jackson. And especially once you get into the playoff series and listening to the coaches and the players speak about why they lost that game, why they lost that series, why they won that series. And over time in that, plus just watching it and watching in the playoffs, like it sort of built up the way that my brain now consumes basketball is like, once you get to the playoffs, there are certain players that just cannot stay on the floor. And usually it's not because they can't shoot. There are some, though, and that's evolved even more in the last couple of years. I think the most recent example is like last year in the Denver series with Vanderbilt. And how was with that specific matchup with the degree to which Vanderbilt was struggling shooting, right? Was like, had he just been able to hit a couple of more, though, threes? And that was like the difference, again, between 20% and 30% or like 33%. And that's the way low end. Most guys are going to be somewhere between like 33 and 40. And I've made this point over and over and over again. And watching the current playoffs, is there a player that's been taken off the floor because he just absolutely can't hit an open shot? Aaron Gordon is a good example. He barely took a three. I think his first one that he made was in game 5. And the Lakers were going to give it to him. He hits one, but he does so many other things so well that he's staying on the court. Is there a player on the other extreme? Is there a player that sort of is just known as a knockdown shooter, but was out there even that didn't do anything else? I guess Buddy Hield, who doesn't really do that much else. He had one good game for the Sixers and was otherwise completely irrelevant from the series. And he is a knockdown shooter. But like to me, the evidence is so clear. Even with the evolution of what's happened with shooting in the NBA in the regular season and making your plans and running beautiful offense and all that, that ain't what happens in the playoffs. It's the same stuff that's always happened. And like, you have to be just a good basketball player. The shots will come, and the better teams with more talent, like the Celtics that move the ball around and play for threes, they're going to get threes. I get that. They're going to get them up, but they're not winning games because of the three. They're winning games because of their versatile talent and size. And that, does the three-point line impact that? Sure. But that's not like the key. It's not the crux of what their roster is, I don't think.
I would argue they're winning games because of both of those reasons. I also think that it's important to think about this in fives rather than think about it in terms of individual talent. So let's take a break here, come back and talk about that.
Hey guys, Trudell here. What's going on with your teeth? I ask because mine are feeling and looking great, thanks to Dr. Jonathan Goodbye.
Dr. Goodbye is a lifelong Lakers fan. Example, when I first met him, we were discussing Phil Jackson's preferred second unit in 2009, so he knows his stuff. Then I walked into his state-of-the-art office in Beverly Hills, and it is nice. It's like a relaxing spa. It's got TVs in the ceiling that connect to your headphones so you can watch shows while you get your dental work done. They even give you this calming, hot-scented towel on your face. If you have a healthy mouth, Dr. Goodbye can keep it that way. He also specializes in cosmetic transformations, including veneers, crowns, Invisalign, and implants. Dr. Goodbye works with his own in-house lab in Beverly Hills, so you know exactly what you're getting. Tell them that Mike Trudell sent you, and you'll get a full consultation, including 3D x-ray, for free. That's a $950 value. So if you're in the Los Angeles area and you need a dentist you can trust, call Dr. Goodbye, the official dentist of the Laker Film Room podcast, at 310-707-1005 or visit bhsmile.com.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Let me prime you on this more, just with the Boston example. Like, who on the Celtics, other than Sam Hauser, who comes off the bench, who amongst those players, the five, is shooting their primary skill set? Is it Jason Tatum? I don't think so. Is it Jaylen Brown?
Oh, yeah, no, it's none of them. But who of them? But who of them isn't a good shooter?
Jrue Holiday isn't a good shooter.
Jrue Holiday's shot like high 30s, at least in the regular season. We'll see. He's one of those guys when the things turn up in the playoffs.
Playoff stats, though. He can knock down shot. Like, this is my whole point. Like, Jrue Holiday on the floor for me anytime. But some people have said in the past they've lost series because Jrue Holiday can't shoot. He can't hit open threes. He is giving you so much more value, no matter what he shoots from three, that he should be on the floor. And I mean, here, Pete, make your point, and I'll give you Jrue Holiday's playoff stats.
So I'm going to give you Jrue Holiday's regular season stats, right? So this is part of the story of the Celtics and if they'll be able to do it this year. The last 4 years, 39.2% on five attempts, 41% on five attempts, 38% on six attempts, 43% this season on five attempts. So the times when he becomes a not so good 3-point shooter, you're good. You'll miss those stats. But my point, again, this is that sort of like weak link theory. Last year,
here are his stats, right? So last year was 29% from three. Year before, 32%. Year before, 30%. Yep. Year before, 32%. This year, it's 37%. And that's like my exact example. We're talking about the difference of like 1-3 going in or not during the game.
But Mike, your setting. Example is a like 39% on five attempts guy as a guy who can't shoot during the regular season, right? Like that's what how they've been able to win so far, right? And then they played a banged up Miami team. Now we'll see if his stats drop from three. But what I'm saying is like their worst 3-point shooter is still a pretty good 3-point shooter. And the point I was going to make coming out of the break was that if you put Aaron Gordon next to Anthony Davis rather than Nikola Jokic, he would absolutely have to take more threes because the way defenses would guard them would be conceding more threes to AD in a way that you couldn't to Jokic. And so when I talk about thinking about it in fives, it's about Aaron Gordon can go five games without taking a three because he's surrounded by a great shooting five, a great shooting backcourt, Michael Porter Jr., right? And so it's about how you fit into the overall five-man group in my eyes.
100%. And Darius, to kick this to you though, this to me is just standard now. Almost every NBA team, except for, and even the Timberwolves, like if they're going to play Gobert, but then they're playing Towns, who was a great 3-point shooter. McDaniels is fine, right? Edwards, not always the most efficient, but certainly can knock him down. Conley can knock him down. OKC plays five guys that can shoot threes. So like at this point, it's not everybody shoots threes. I guess it's my point now. So you don't have to be so desperate when you're like roster building and there aren't that many players that don't shoot them or that can't shoot them to the same degree as there was. So the whole boat has been lifted with the way the teams are shooting and the way that offense is going.
So I agree with your point in the bigger picture, but then I sway back to what Pete's saying about like five-man groups and who do you have on the court and who are your best players? I look at the Lakers. LeBron had one of his best three-point shooting season of his entire career. As we go into the offseason too, like I think we'll do like more like player profile sort of pods as well and sort of break down discussions about the Lakers season. But LeBron was great as a shooter, but the three that he hit down the stretch of either game five or game four was a pretty critical three. And guys went under the screen on him again. My point is that when looking at the Lakers roster, they're such an unconventional build to me in that their best players are basically a power forward and a center. Your power forward handles the ball a ton. He is traditionally a player that even if he shoots 40% from three on a season on good volume, that teams are so scared of him driving and so scared of his ability to get to the paint that they are still conceding a shot that in a true shooting or effective field goal percentage way is basically worth like a paint shot. It's like worth the same, right? And they're willing to concede that shot to him because if he gets inside, it's a guaranteed 2 points. It's almost like we can't surrender this. And the way that he is as a passer, his shot creation is going to create the types of open threes that you really don't want to surrender. I think the right balance the Lakers struck was with the team that they built that won the title, which was we've got stable enough 3-point shooters that even that, to Mike's point now, to bring it back to what Mike is arguing, is that shooting is not their best skill, but they are capable enough at that skill that the rest of their games are going to allow them to contribute and not be like, if this thing isn't working, we can do the other thing. Too many players, Pete, I feel like if their shooting falls off, then what else are you actually doing? And do you have enough of a well-rounded game to say, I can be a playmaker, I can be a defender, I can be a rebounder? Right. And that's like the Aaron Gordon point.
So I would argue on offense, shooting was absolutely the best skill of KCP and Danny Green. It wasn't always there, but in terms of like what they do best on offense, court, right?
Yes. What they do
offensively,
best on,
yes. Yes. And then in a more holistic sense, it's like, do you play defense or not? Is sort of the core question of, can you still contribute if your jump shot is not there? Because the other skill that we haven't talked about, but we're talking around, is ball handling, right? It's that's what KCP and Danny Green didn't have that was unusual for backcourt players. That team, LeBron, was very much the point guard of that. And in these playoffs—
And that's why Rondo emerged in that postseason as that next ball handler.
So, yes. And this is something Rondo and Dwight are two—
who couldn't shoot.
Correct.
But did in that playoffs.
Well, that's the thing, though. Rondo, like
they were getting the wide open ones, and he was hitting enough.
By that point of his career, Rondo was a perfectly good open, wide open catch and shoot three guy. In like, if you're going to guard him like Vando, the way teams guard Vando, Rondo would hit that shot at a pretty good clip if he had to speed up or anything like that. But like,
and as we saw from the Lakers season, almost every NBA player will hit shots if you let them shoot to the degree that, that teams are letting Rondo shoot.
Boy, did we see that this regular season, didn't we? Yeah. And so,
and that's kind of here, Pete, finish your point, but that's all. This is one of those places where I think we basically agree.
We do, it's but just, we arrive at it from different directions. I'm coming from the West. You're coming from the East. Yeah. So
why do you get to come from the West?
That's where I'm from, man. That's not where you're from. So, and think about like, that's very heliocentric offense. Both LeBron and Rondo are a certain era of basketballs. Like, you give that guy the ball, players. Even Kobe wasn't to that degree. Kobe would operate off ball and work into the mid post and out of the triangle, you know, a lot of triple threat position type stuff where he didn't start out with the ball, but there was that initial pass D to trigger, you know, over to the wing to trigger the corner cut and all of that in the triangle. And Kobe's on the weak side. But in terms of just like, hey, you have the ball. Now, when we really needed to score, was Kobe that? Of course.
Well, also, too, but in the D'Antoni season, he was just like, oh, you think I can't do it this way? Get the hell out of my way. I'm just going to do everything. But anyways, please.
So if you think about that, the title team, both LeBron and Rondo are like, Rondo's the bench version of that at that point. But in terms of how you run your offense, it's give this one guy the ball. And then AD emerges as just this triple threat monster, this KD light, you know, hitting everything. And that is a enough offense when you've got a defense like that to really beat the crap out of pretty much everybody. And so, but what I think the going from that point to where we are today, there was, and I was obviously not executed to the way that I think was hoped to be, but there was a like, we need additional ball handling. We can't have LeBron be the only guy who beats guys off the dribble, off the perimeter. This is part of the reason too why I've been really preaching like the value of LeBron in the post. And in the games where we were like, oh crap, our back's up against the wall, we gotta beat Denver, which we did once, and we were ahead for much of that series, the more it was like LeBron just bullies Jamal Murray or KCP down low, and that's how we're going to score. I wish we had worked on that more during the year, and I hope that's something that we can take going forward, Mike. And so there is a certain degree of like, how much ball handling do we need that's in this conversation too, that we'll talk about on the other side of this break.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, let me shelve ball handling for a second, but don't bring it back in here.
Sorry.
But like the way that I'm thinking about this conversation, it's more so about the front court because, you know, barring very few exceptions of players, and we just mentioned one in Rondo, your guys that are coming in to play one and two and even three at this point basically like aren't in the league if they can't shoot to some, to at least some value, a three-pointer, right? We could go around the league and there are a couple guys, but for the most part, you know, your guards are hitting threes here. So I'm thinking about the kind of swing players, the defensive players. So AD, Giannis, Evan Mobley, jump in if you think of a couple of the guys just that are like, that don't take and make a lot of threes. Draymond, except for that one game against the Lakers.
So these are bigs in March. Though, basically, right?
Yeah.
He's talking forwards that's forwards and big guys. Kind
of but I would argue that none of those guys are forwards in the modern NBA. Every one of those guys.
Well, that's the evolution of the game, though. But then, so just bear with me. But now we're talking then we're thinking from bringing the big center guys, right? So there's the Gobert on one hand, then there's the Embiid, Jokic, and like then there's the Brook Lopez. Like they're all of these are different types. Where one guy, Brook is a stretch. And like Valanciunas, who even though he'll hit the occasional three, is still going to be down low. Then there's DeAndre Ayton, who will shoot nothing but mid-range jump shots in short little hook because he doesn't like to go inside, even though he could probably shoot threes. And I say this all to focus back on Anthony Davis. And like a lot of what this roster, thinking about the roster moving forward, you know, which is the best way for Anthony Davis to get his points?
Yes.
And like, which is the best role for him on offense? And I, going back to that, the season where everybody talks about bubble AD and how amazing and at the four and like off the dribble and shooting, I remember watching a lot of those games thinking, you know what? I would actually like him to settle less for these jumpers. And this year he has been settling almost not at all. Especially in this playoff series against Denver. I loved the energy in the attack that AD had trying to score, going right at Jokic. And Jokic is somebody that's easier to go at, certainly, than some bigs. So that's baked into this. And I know you can make the argument about, you know, how a defense would play him against a guy that could hold up a little better. But what is the proper way for Anthony Davis to play offense? He can do it all. I am convinced that if you just let him shoot a ton of jumpers every game, he would get a rhythm. He would make more threes. Like he can play that way, I think. But I like him more inside if I can get a little bit more defense and a stretch, whether it's you want to call him a five or a four. It's just there are so few of those kinds of guys out there that can also move their feet defensively. And then that creates a different type of roster balance or imbalance that you have to figure out, because then LeBron is also moved to the three, moving into year 22.
That's right. And that might be the more complicated thing. We always talk about AD, but that might be the one that's the thing that we actually have to work around.
And guys, we had this discussion going into this season, even.
We did.
You know, like, you know, so it's like I don't view it like as a problem per se with where Anthony Davis is. It's more like in terms of where LeBron is at, you know, in year 22 and where he's going to be. So that's why I get to kind of like the shooting and like, can Anthony Davis hit a jump shot? And like I've watched this dude in practice sometimes just drilling. Like, it's not like he doesn't have the stroke,
right?
It's more about where do you want him to focus his energies? And please, Darius, jump in.
No, so I think the LeBron point is an important point. I think the AD point is an important point. It's just super interesting to build a team around a player like LeBron, who is a ball handling big man, who can score on and off the ball, but is still most comfortable sort of dictating the terms of how an offensive possession unfolds with the ball in his hands. It's like what he's done his entire life. And AD, who clearly, Pete, he didn't sandbag the regular season by any means. Look at his regular season numbers. No, but
that was a different dude on the ball, man. Yep.
He was amazing. But in the playoffs, he ramped up his level of attentiveness and directiveness, like you can't mess with me. Just his commitment to making the play and being a threat, both on and off the ball, he hit another level again. So to me, it's like, what do you need from those other three guys who are next to them? And the idea of, I think, to skew towards the point that Mike was making, more two-way players is super important. But if those players are going to have skills offensively, they can't have their floor be as low as what we saw the floors be of some of the players when the stakes get the highest, right? And this goes back to a point I was making a couple of pods ago about being an 82-game player versus a 16-game player versus being like a 100-game player, right? And I feel like the Lakers had a couple of 82-game players, and I'll be interested to see if they can find a 100-game player who can both handle the ball and compete defensively at a level where he is going to have a more stable performance from game to game to game. And that's where I feel like the separation between the Lakers and the Nuggets, and to me, what I've seen across the playoffs with how these teams have advanced, their stars have been there for them basically every single night, but their role players, like look at what Josh Hart was doing towards the end of that series, and contrast that to what like Tobias Harris was doing for Philly. Right. And the Lakers got a bit of a taste of that with like D'Angelo Russell on the games where Russell was really good. The Lakers were in those games for longer. And the game where both him and Austin and Rui were all in double figures, the Lakers won. It's not a coincidence to me that that was the game that they won, Pete. So I'm all into this idea of like, let's talk about what the Lakers need to do and how to build out a team. But I think it does start with what is your defensive floor too? And then can you hit shots? Where are you at with that?
It starts with who your guys are. I thought you hit it perfectly earlier when you were like, the Lakers are an unconventional team because, and you started with LeBron and AD. When you compare the Lakers build, think of it in like an NBA Jam sort of way. It's a 2-on-2 tournament, and we're playing NBA Jam, and who are the guys that...
Boom shakalaka.
Right, who are the boom shakalaka guys, or who's the he's hitting up, right? If you've got LeBron and AD, just naturally, I'm going to be like, I don't want to get freaking dunked on every play, and there is a high danger of that happening with these two guys. But if AD is going to take a three, and that to me is one of the core things that we have to build around, is that if you look at those guys that you were just talking about, D, how many of them are AD level jump shooters?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so a lot of AD's dominance is around the hoop. And even in that series, it was too. That's part of why it was like, oh, don't put AD in the corner. Like, he's not good at that this year.
Yeah.
He's killing you around the rim. Don't sideline him. And so building around that reality, Mike, it's more about like the reality of what the Lakers are, is that you're starting at a point where AD's jump shooting is at a level lower than most of the other real guys in the NBA, but AD is still a real guy on offense. And I think you're arguing, let's help facilitate that to a greater degree.
Well, yeah, but this is where you can't ignore why AD was in the corner and who put him there. And that's LeBron James. He's still the alpha. He's still LeBron James going into year 22, and he's still going to say, you know, what's best for, like, he's still going to think most of the time, what's the best way to attack the defense? And he's not doing that selfishly.
So LeBron James should be in the center of it too. It's basketball is not rocket science.
Yeah.
There are ways to get to it, but
the reason he did it, they put Gordon on him. Right. And
yes.
So, okay, I want to keep going at Jokic, and that's the priority. Going at Jokic is the priority, not Anthony Davis. And so they went at Jokic and it worked a couple of times.
But that's coaching too. So it's just like we talk about LeBron and AD and how to get the best out of them. And I think that it's easy to always look inward to the player about how the player can be better, right? But almost every great player I've ever heard talk has basically said, I need to be coached too. Like, as much as players want that independence, as much as players will bristle against a coach that is basically telling them some shit that they don't want to hear in that moment, go back and listen to any of those players 10, 15, 20 years after they retire, and they will all tell you about how meaningful it was that the coach gave them the direction that they needed. And so I'm with you, Mike, that LeBron might have been like, this is what we're going to do. But after the game,
right,
I heard Darvin Ham basically say, that's what we wanted to do. And so LeBron's being...
And what I'm saying is the coaching is, and the right thing to do is to, if you see that happening and you see AD fading to the perimeter, is to throw a shit fit and be like, yeah, everybody, this guy's really good. Whatever we do, he's got to be right in the middle of what we're trying to do.
So moving forward and just thinking about this idea that will bear out as the free agency comes up and potential trade targets and all that.
Uh-huh.
The LeBron AD and offense, and is it good enough? And I just still think that there are enough pieces that you could put around in different ways.
I do too.
That you just have to decide, you know, which, like, ideally, you've got two looks, and this is getting back to where we were when the team last won the title, right? Is there a player that maybe impacts AD from a spacing standpoint because that player is a big man who just isn't a good enough shooter to be respected? You can even talk about the prototype of a Jackson Hayes. Like, is that a look that you can go to enough, you know, in for however minutes long it is a game that gives AD some help on the other end and just in terms of athleticism and all that. And I think there is, I think that player could be there. And then is there a wing player that, and maybe again, if Vanderbilt's healthy, like does Vanderbilt's shooting or lack thereof, can he be that guy with LeBron and AD without the shooting? If you would have started Vanderbilt all year instead of Rui, what would have happened? Well, the defense certainly would have been better and the offense would have been worse. Is there enough of a middle ground there, guys, where that's fine because he, or do you switch out one of the guards and one of the guards is more of a shooter or is more of a defensive player, right? Or so say that Austin is more the offensive focus and you have D'Lo either in like a six man role. That's a whole nother conversation, yes. But like, these are things that I'm trying to envision as to what do the players on the roster, if given more latitude within certain roles, or is there some more hybrid player between Vanderbilt and Hachimura that sure, they have to try and target, you know, or even on the other side of it, like an enhanced Christian Wood type. And that's the question I think that's important.
So the part I have the most passionate feelings about is the backup five spot. And that's why I brought Dwight up earlier. I feel like we need a defensive five. We've targeted offensive-minded fives in, I think, this effort to improve our spacing and offense. And I think that this was also a year where the offense really modernized. And that's something that needed to happen. But the five is such a center pivot point, especially of the style of defense that we play, but especially when you have Anthony Davis, it doesn't matter what coach it doesn't matter what scheme we're running defensively. Will Anthony Davis be at the center of it? He should be. And so what do you put around that and what do you need to do? I think that you need a defensive five for two reasons. Is one, if AD goes down, this is one of the things, like, this was the season we got 70 plus games out of LeBron and AD. I think there's a good argument to be made that the offensive shift, playing that style of basketball, is easier on the body and helps facilitate that. And so I think that's one of the wins of the offensive shift is the health of those guys. But we're not guaranteed that going forward. And when AD was out, I'm talking not able to play in the game or got poked in the eye in the first quarter or something, Darius, you saw this, man. Like the whole thing falls apart. And so my concern is that to get through the 82, just having a defensive five that even if he's an uncoordinated goober on offense, frankly, that's where the point where I'm at, where it's like, can you keep the defensive structure together? There are enough guys where it's like, if 80's out on offense, like, hey, Rui, can you take more shots? Austin, D'Lo. Yeah, we got enough guys that can increase their usage. What we don't have is a guy that can hold the structure of the defense altogether, you know?
AD is the Jenga block on the bottom.
Yes, thank you.
You pull that thing out, boom, whole thing collapses.
That's LeBron, why I always said AD is Atlas, right? It's he carries it all.
LeBron's a couple levels up where like you pull it out and you know, it's dicey. That thing's going to tip a little bit, but like maybe it can hold for a game or two, obviously not more than that. And then some of the other guys on the team, you just pull that thing right off the top.
Sure.
You know, but like if you pull, because of what the roster was, if you pulled that bottom one out, and so that this is not a defense versus shooting, like a stretch five versus a protective five. But Pete, of course, I'm right there with you. You know, that's the thing, because of what the roster is, there's got to be some stability, some other mooring, that a piece that you can slot in there, even if it's a cheaper piece of plastic, it's not wood, like, but you can at least stick that in there for a couple minutes before it wears and tears, so until you can get AD back.
And I also think a guy like Jackson Hayes is very valuable too. He's more of an offensive player, but he helps stabilize the team too in ways that, I really believe in that defensive five.
I do as well. I also think, though, that you're never going to be able to replicate everything that AD does. And so it's sort of like, I'm not saying this is your argument. I'm saying, though, that it's folly to say, like, we're going to do X and this guy's going, like, because you know that that's not going to happen. I think.
Do not fall apart on defense. Please help us. Don't fall apart on defense. That's all yeah.
So a part of that is, though, too, is like, what is the level of defensive player like all over the rest of the court? So sure, one of the things that you can do in order to not fall apart on defense is to not say, well, this is the only defensive guy that we have on the team who's getting major minutes, right? And this was one of the issues, I think, of players 4 through 10 and 4 through 12 like on the team, and then the decisions of who played within those roles about what they were good at defensively and how they could impact the game defensively, and the approach to saying, let's just play more offensive guys instead. And then, and then if AD's not there, then everything does actually fall apart because you actually don't have players 4 through 10 who can defend as well.
And to that point, I think Vando is a fairly important Jenga block in terms of the defensive identity. He was so relied upon to be this great point of attack defender that can also rebound. It's like he can help the smaller guards, but provide some of the motor and energy and size that thrives alongside the stars, you know?
Well, this was also, Pete, why I was arguing for more size on the court in general when AD wasn't playing, because even if you weren't going to be as good defensively at all of those other positions, you could make up for some of your weaknesses with more size, right? So I wasn't arguing for Jackson Hayes because I thought he was going to replicate anything that Anthony Davis was doing. I was arguing for Jackson Hayes next to LeBron, next to Rui, in order to have a baseline level of size and athleticism on the court, because those things can help cover up some of the other weaknesses that you have that you actually aren't able to say this one player is going to do all of these things for us. The one game the Lakers won, AD had half of the team's rebounds. He had 23 of the team's 46 rebounds.
Yeah.
To build out a roster and then to form rotations around the idea that this one guy is going to be so good at all of this stuff, but then we're going to remove him and not try to compensate in all of the places where he actually helps you, and just say, okay, well, now that AD's out, let's play two forwards and three guards and let's go play and let's be the same team. As a primary look, like that's not going to necessarily get you to where you want to go.
You are allowed to build on the strength too.
That's right. Like, it's not just like, plugging holes in the boat. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're, if that's, you can lean into the identity, and you're not going to, I don't mean you're going to find like AD Jr., but just that type of, think about the teams that have, you know, two big wings, like, you know, like Boston or like.
This is where I go back to the Knicks as an example too. Pete, you were making the joke about how it's just like, just throw the ball up and then jailbreak. But part of that was because they built on a strength of saying, oh yeah, we not only have one good offensive rebounding big in Mitchell Robinson, we got a second one in Isaiah Hartenstein. And now we've got a wing that does that in Josh Hart. And we've got another athletic wing that we're going to tell to crash in DiVincenzo. And then we get another, another one with OG Anunoby.
They're not built to defend that. Right? And if, bro, this is kind of what Minnesota does. This is what I'm saying is that this is, we talk about shooting and the trends toward that. And Mike is right that that's been happening for long enough that the vast majority of guys who come into the NBA can do that on some level. Not everybody, but they can. But what's also happening is this idea of like, wow, you guys are really small. If we just attack you from the perimeter and on the boards, we can get a lot of free points. And you see a lot of big teams thriving in these playoffs. So we got to wrap up here. But this has been a fun talk, first of many. We will be back next week. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to the winner. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. With his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable.
It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.